Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Providence Journal presents Nick and Bob, the college basketball podcast for Rhode Island and around the nation, with your hosts, Kevin McNamara and Bill Koch.
Hello and welcome to the latest version of the Providence Journal's Pick and Pop podcast. This is Kevin McNamara of the Providence Journal along with Bill Koch. Bill, welcome back to the podcast. It's been an interesting week already.
Kevin Mack, we are making podcast history this week. I'm here in the studio running the board, and Kevin had a little personal business to tend to today, so he is out of the studio at a secret undisclosed location, and we're actually patching him through on the phone for, I think... probably the first time in, you know, maybe two or three years. I think you were out at Butler at one point and called in from a hotel room in Indianapolis. So it's been a little while since we've tried this.
Yes, well, this is actually the first time with the Providence Journal's board. I do remember that time. And I think I taped that podcast on my personal tape recorder in Indianapolis and then emailed it to Rhode Island.
I think that's right.
This is truly the maiden voyage, and I appreciate the background work of all our experts back in Providence. All I can say is I'm not at a gym, so you won't hear the ball bouncing behind me.
That's right.
Hey, it is what it is.
That's right.
So we're going to start actually with the Friars. Providence, believe it or not, is one of the hotter teams in the country right now, with a second straight win over a top 25 team, maybe more importantly, second straight win over a top 15 net team. The Friars last night, wasn't quite sure who that team was, Bill, in the second half. Jumped all over Creighton in the second half and ended up winning going away. 73-56 over the Jays. Outscored Creighton 41-20 in the second half. And, Bill, how about these numbers? Second half shooting. 61% from the field, 80% from the three-point line. Who were those guys?
It felt like the two teams switched uniforms, didn't it? You would have expected something like that out of Creighton, who is a top 10 offensive team in the nation coming into the game. But Providence, and specifically A.J. Reeves, caught fire in the second half. The Blue Jays had 20 points in the last 20 minutes, and A.J. Reeves had 19 all by himself. And that's the sort of thing that he's capable of doing. That's why Providence fans were so excited when he was recruited here, because he's an elite shooter who can score in bunches. He led everyone last night with 22 points, 6 for 8 from three-point range. And, you know, as Ed Cooley said, and I'm paraphrasing after the game, it's a lot easier to play when you can make some shots.
Well, and, you know, I think that was the lead of my game story. Cooley's been saying that pretty much after every game. And, you know, we're playing elite defense, as good a defense as people are playing in the league. We just can't score freely enough. And, you know, that was not the case in the second half last night. I will say that Creighton is not, you know, one of the better defensive teams in the league, but three-pointers are three-pointers. And, you know, Providence, again, made 8 of 10 in the second half, 12 for the game. Very simple. If Providence can make double-figure threes, they're not going to lose many more games the rest of the season. The problem is I think we all know that averages say that that's not the Friar team that Friar fans have seen all season. Finding the happy medium somewhere is really what Cooley's looking for, but the Friars are clearly playing better. Defensively, you know, it's easy to get excited about the 41 points in the second half. But to hold Creighton to 20 points, and I think you have the analytics spill in front of you, Creighton did come into the game as one of the better offensive teams in the entire country. That they had just gone into Villanova and knocked around the Wildcats only on the weekend with a 15-point win, 76-61 at Nova. This is a very good offensive team that Providence totally shut down in the second half.
You know, and to be fair, Greg McDermott said it after the game, and I thought he was, you know, very gracious in saying this. Providence probably should have beat Creighton twice this year. You know, had him in the late stages out in Nebraska and let that one slip away, and that sort of started this difficult stretch in the schedule, and it started Providence's losing streak. You know, they ended up dropping three in a row to Creighton, Seton Hall, and Villanova, but it looks like a win at Butler has righted the ship. They carried that momentum into the game against Creighton. You know, did a great job, obviously, on Mitch Balick, who started making his first five shots and then missed his final eight. Providence made a good adjustment in a timeout there. They went to David Duke on Mitch Balick. And then, you know, as McDermott said, they mixed in a little zone, a little man-to-man. They gave Creighton some different looks, you know, maybe over the last 30 minutes or so of the game. And, you know, they were really, really effective. You know, in Providence now, with opportunity in front of them, as we've talked about all season, they're turning themselves into maybe a little bit of an interesting test case for the selection committee. Your four quadrant one wins. They went from 70 to 59 in KenPom, from 65 to 55 in the net with that win on Wednesday night. So you're looking at Providence now with six straight coming up against quadrant one teams. That starts at Xavier on the weekend, and you know, let's say Providence goes 3-3 in those six games, seven quadrant one wins, they're going to be playing themselves onto the bubble again.
No, they definitely have been able to in the last two games right the ship and get the fans excited about what they need to be in the NCAA tournament. And be honest with you, that's just so far away. You know, Providence right now, 10 Big East games down, 8 to go. All I can say is they need to get to double figures at a minimum. And even if they can get to 11, if it's not the right teams, the right collection of teams, I think, Bill, you and I could probably 5-5 wins right now, potential wins out there. But, you know, if the last names are Xavier twice, St. John's, Georgetown, DePaul, I don't think that gets it done for you, you know. So I don't think it's a big fat number. It's who you beat, where you win, where the game's played. That's what the committee looks at. And if one of those wins down the stretch is, say, Seton Hall at home, well, then we can really talk. Because what Providence is going to be able to present, potentially be able to present to the selection committee, is one of the more unique resumes of any team in the country, because they have glaring warts. But just they could have a collection of high-profile wins that other teams on the bubble just won't have.
No, that's right, and we talk about that every year. You know, the committee wants to know who you scheduled and who you beat. They're more impressed by who you beat than necessarily by who you lost to. You know, Providence is 6-4 against Quadrant 3 and Quadrant 4. We've detailed those games, you know, losing to Long Beach State, losing to Penn at home, you know, losing to Charleston on a neutral site, you know, just some really, really tough ones to start the year. You know, but you're looking at a team right now that does have opportunity in front of them, that should be feeling good about themselves. And, you know, Kevin, I know you're going out to Xavier this weekend. That's traditionally a place where Providence has struggled, you know, but you're catching the Musketeers at maybe their lowest point, you know, within the last few seasons. 15-8 overall, just 4-6 in the Big East. They're coming off two straight wins, one at Seton Hall, which was a stunner on Saturday. They won at DePaul on Tuesday night, but this isn't one of the quote unquote elite opponents in the conference coming up.
No, it's an interesting team, Bill, because Xavier began the season as probably the third pick in the Big East. Actually, I have the see what the conference coaches picked them at the start of the season. Got it right here. Yeah, they did. They picked them third overall. Understandably, why? Because a real veteran team out in Cincinnati, Tyreek Jones, Quentin Gooden, Najee Marshall. You know, a lot of top 50, top 100 recruits, Paul Scruggs, who've seen an awful lot of games. Now, last year, kind of similar to this year, in all honesty, underachieved for a big chunk of the year and then played really well down the stretch. And they played in one way, really physical, aggressive basketball. And that's exactly how they've looked the last two games. And I think They would say that they're playing their best of the season now, which is pretty odd, coming off, as you said, with a losing Big East record at 4-6. But to go into Seton Hall and really just beat up the Pirates. Tyreek Jones was the Big East Player of the Week last week because he made 9 of 10 shots, 19 points, and 18 rebounds. And then he bounces back in the next game against DePaul, a relatively easy win on Tuesday night, and he gets 18 more rebounds. So it was interesting last night. I did not include it in my game report this morning, but Ed Cooley said, well, we're going to have the toughest practice of our season today, Thursday. And A.J. Reeves was sitting next to him, and he kind of giggled, and Ed shot him a death stare and said, go ahead, laugh. But bring your shoulder pads and your helmet.
Right.
So I think what Cooley was saying was, if there's any team in the Big East that's as physical or more physical than us, wants to grind it out, the type of defense that we've seen Providence play for the last several weeks, it's Xavier. So that game is going to be super physical, very aggressive, and I think who can dominate around the rim and rebound the ball is going to have a really good chance to win.
Yeah, Tyreek Jones, the pride of Bloomfield, Connecticut. That's a guy who the locals would have liked to keep home, but were unable to do it. And you know, now you got Providence playing against him at this point on Saturday. I will also be on the road on Saturday, Kevin, traveling to our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., to watch the Red Hot Roading Rams, winners of 9 straight after Tuesday's 73-67 victory over UMass. Just another game where URI had to hold serve. They're coming off a nice home win over VCU, a game that they dominated in the early stages. They're up by 29 points early in the second half. Ended up hanging on at the end, 87-75. And, you know, Kevin, just looking at URI right now, a team that would be in the NCAA tournament if the season ended today. I think we both believe that. You know, a team that is clicking on all cylinders and has a marquee matchup coming up next Tuesday against Dayton. Can't afford to stumble in front of that one. The Colonials struggling toward the bottom of the A-10. Team that's 10-13 overall, just 4-6 in the league. These are the types of games that you need to win to set up the big spotlight matchups.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. The Rams would be in the tournament right now. I think they'd barely be in because they're the best thing that they have going for them right now is domination through the Atlantic 10, which has certainly been impressive. As you said, with only one quad one win, you know, they have some work to do, and that work will come soon enough with a trip to Dayton next week. But there's several games on their schedule the rest of the way that they simply cannot afford to lose. And one I think that's a little dangerous is Saturday. GW is a young team. I like their coach. J-Man Christian is going to be, I think he's going to get the Colonials back up to the middle, if not even the top of the Atlantic 10 in relatively short order. I really like him. He doesn't have that type of talent now, but they're playing much harder than they have in the past. And you know, they've given some good middle to upper level Atlantic 10 teams a push. Most recently, I believe St. Louis. Not sure if that game was in D.C. or not. I believe it was. It's a dangerous game. I consider GW more dangerous than UMass and Fordham and some of the other teams at the bottom of the A-10 right now.
Yeah, there is some talent there. You know, just looking at their raw pieces, Jameer Nelson Jr. is having a nice freshman year, the son of the St. Joe's legend. They are playing a little shorthanded. The last two games they've been without Armel Potter, senior guard who is fifth in the country in assist rate, actually. You know, very capable hands in the backcourt. They really missed him Wednesday night at St. Bonaventure, a tough place to go. Regardless, lost 72-47 in that game, and you know his status is questionable going into Saturday. If they don't have him, you can imagine playing without a point guard against Rhode Island and Fats Russell. He's going to look at you like a piece of red meat, you know, and try to take full advantage. You could see him up to his usual tricks against UMass the other night. He had 21 points, 16 of those in the second half. You know, just a dominant player at this point at both ends of the floor, added 4 steals on defense. You know, and Kevin, I know you were at the game for a fair amount. It was one that Rhodey was sort of stuck in second gear. But just from a physical talent standpoint, from a confidence standpoint, that's going to be enough for them in some stretches of games. And then all of a sudden, when they downshift into third gear, like they did midway through the second half, they're capable of these bursts. And they really sort of put the game away. Fat scoring 6 straight points, a steal, and a run-out dunk that pushed the lead into double figures, and it was all over.
Well, and I think the person who leads that spark game after game and has that extra gear, two plus, is Russell. You know, it's amazing, Bill. You know, obviously I watch the Rams as much as possible, see them on TV more than live. You see them live all the time. To see the speed and quickness that Fats has when he does turn it up to that extra notch, it's pro level, in all honesty. I think even with his size, he has a chance to play in the big league because of that extra gear. You know, we can have a podcast all about Fats' potential NBA chances at some later date, but bottom line is, in the Atlantic 10, when he wants to go and really go, there's no one who's staying in front of him. And if he's making his jump shot, he's all but unguardable, because going to the rim with speed and quickness, you're not staying in front of him. It's just a matter of whether he can make his shots. And obviously, he's made his shots at a very high clip all season long. Hats off. Well, we certainly can't overlook the achievement that Cyril Langevin had on Tuesday night, going over 1,000 points. You know, I know their careers are winding up. I'm sure you're working on some stories down the stretch on both Jeff Doughton and Cyril's really run here at URI. It's you can put it into context, but it's historic, especially if they can make an NCAA tournament for the third time in their careers. It's very simple, Ram fans. Cherish these two guys and the last, you know, month or 6 weeks or whatever their season's going to be, because they've really had just an awful lot of winning.
Yeah, there's only one other class that's made three NCAA tournaments, and that was 1997, 98, and 99. They made it 3 years in a row. This would be 3 out of 4 if they're fortunate enough to not stumble down the stretch and do the job and get themselves into March. And you look at those two guys, you know, they've been factors, you know, right from the start. You know, obviously Jeff Doughton ascending to the starting point guard role as a freshman. Jarvis Garrett very gracefully accepting his demotion to the bench and, you know, still willing to work for the team and showing great character in doing that. You know, but it was obvious that Jeff, with his length, with his decision-making, was probably going to be the future. And, you know, Dan Hurley handled what could have been a difficult situation very well. You know, Cyril, you just look at his physicality and you look at the fact that he has an outside shot of finishing with 1,000 rebounds as well. Only two other URI players have done that. You know, so you're looking at a guy who, you know, in terms of the paint and, you know, the way that he brings it and straps it up every night, it is one of the best in program history. This is also, you know, to your point, it's only the fourth time that URI has had 3,000-point scorers on the roster at the same time. You know, Jeff Doughton reached that number in the A-10 tournament last year. Fats Russell reached it a little earlier this year at St. Joe's in his hometown of Philadelphia. So, you know, it's not often that they have these clusters of players, you know, who are such talented character pieces. It hasn't happened very often where those pieces have come together and won as much as these guys have. They're going for 10 in a row on Saturday. They've only had one longer winning streak in the last 30 years, and that was the 2017-18 season where they won 16 straight, wound up in the top 20, you know, played themselves into the round of 32 of the NCAA tournament. So you're just to put it in perspective, you're looking at one of the most successful 4-year runs in Rhodey history for this class, Doughton and Langevin, and that goes back to, you know, the culture that was created by Hurley, by E.C. Matthews, by Jared Terrell, by Hassan Martin, and now is being continued by David Cox and a lot of guys who he recruited personally. You know, Jeff Doughton was a guy who he was the lead on. Fats Russell was a guy who he was the lead on. And it's turned out that he's given himself some very nice presents as he's transferred one seat down into the head coach's role.
I'll say. And, you know, Bill, it's a good point that they had the great run winning streak 2 years ago as well, and with these three guys playing a key role in that run, I think they carry forward some lessons from that run into this year. It's not easy to be favored game after game and still get the job done, and have some that, you know, you have to play right to the final minute. We've seen that a few times during this run, by the LaSalle game, for example, where the game's not decided until the last minute. That's going to keep happening, down the stretch here. Rhode Island has not been dominant. They're not blowing people out by 15 and 20 points. The team 2 years ago did that a little more frequently than this group. But this one is very efficient. Their defense has been one of the tops in the country. And I really think that their rotation, the tightness of their rotation, everyone knows when they're going to play. They know that in crunch time, a certain little guy is going to take the shots, and that adds to so much winning chemistry that is led by those three guys. Bill, we won't have a podcast before next week's showdown at Dayton. I'm curious your spin on that one out there. My two cents is I've seen Dayton, I'd say, 2.5 games. I don't know their full health. I think that's really important because they've had a few nicks over the course of the season. But I do think that they have the defense to potentially slow down Russell, and that's going to be the key of the game. Everyone knows about Obi Toppin, and I think the focus will be on, what Rhode Island can do to stop potential first-team All-American, maybe even Naismith Award winner as the National Player of the Year. He's going to get his, as they say. He's going to be a problem. But I think Rhode Island has to be able to score with Dayton. They're not going to win that game 62-60. They're going to have to get into the 70s in what really will be just a must-watch game next week.
Yeah, quite simply, it's the best team that Rhode Island's going to play this season. Barring whoever they run into in the NCAA tournament, these guys are better than anyone they've seen. The number two offense in the country, according to Ken Pom right now, they're number one in two-point shooting, number 25 in three-point shooting. They can do it inside, they can do it outside, just about any way you want. That's led by Obi Toppin, obviously, who is a National Player of the Year candidate, as you mentioned. Jalen Crutcher, the junior point guard, is fantastic. I would expect him to be at minimum second team All A-10, if not sneak onto the first team. I'd have to take a deeper look at it, but he's a very good player. You're looking at Trey Landers, who's a senior there, who's done a ton of winning. The type of guy who, similar to like a TJ Buchanan when he was here at URI, only scores it a little bit more. Just does the dirty work, the lunch pail type of stuff. And it's a deep rotation. If you look at guys who they've brought in, Rodney Chapman, the Chattanooga transfer, has settled in, right away. You're playing E.B. Watson, who is a transfer from Michigan. Ryan Mikesell's been a four-year player there. So no shortage of options for Anthony Grant. And, you're looking at Dayton right now. They've won 11 in a row. They're in the top five in the net. Top six in Ken Pom, top 10 in the AP poll. Their losses this year are Kansas on a neutral floor in overtime and Colorado on a neutral floor in overtime. So you're going to have your hands full in that game, regardless of what happens this weekend. Dayton has St. Louis on Saturday at home, a game that's going to be physical. Maybe the Billikens will soften them up a little bit in some way with Hassan French and Jordan Goodwin, but you would expect Dayton to be on a 12-game winning streak and welcoming Rhode Island on Tuesday night to what should be a great environment at UD Arena.
Yeah, and maybe that's another check. Obviously, it's a huge check mark in Dayton's favor is that home court out at Dayton, one of the tougher places to play in the country. And believe me, they are rabid fans and love this team. This might be the best Dayton team in we could be talking 20-plus years. They're that excited about their team. So, Bill, if you get ill, I might be able to jump in and take that game. You should stay under wraps. You have to get to that game. You understand that, sir?
Not on your life, Kevin Mack. Wild horses couldn't drag me away from that one.
Boy.
Those are the sort of occasions that even the sports writers look forward to.
I'm sorry?
Those are the occasions that even the sports writers look forward to.
No question. No question. Bryant is back in action tonight and on a weekend Northeast Conference schedule. They host St. Francis of Brooklyn tonight in Smithfield. If you have a chance to get up there, go up and see the Bulldogs. They also host Central Connecticut on Saturday. Adam Grant, we've talked about on the podcast all season long. He continues to score at a nice clip. And, you know, it's interesting. I saw that there's a chance that maybe Adam is at the Final Four. There's something called the Dos Equis 3-on-3 tournament. And Adam is a senior nominee to play for the Northeast Conference entry in the 3-on-3 tournament. By the way, so is Langevin and
Doughton
for
yep.
URI.
Yep.
So that could be an interesting, I think you have to be a senior, so it'll be an interesting selection process and how they whittle that down. There is a cash prize because seniors will no longer have any eligibility and can take some cash money at the Final Four, so we'll see what happens there. And also, Brown is at home as well in what is a very big weekend for the Bears. They host Dartmouth on Friday night, and then Harvard comes to town on Saturday. Again, a really important home weekend. Protecting your home court in the Ivy League is really vital. Brown did it last week with wins over Cornell and Columbia, and need to do it again this week, Bill.
Yeah, I was at the Columbia game. Brown closed strong on a 14-4 run over the last 5 minutes or so. Managed to win that one 72-66. Could not get defensive stops early in the second half. The Lions were 14-for-22 coming out of the locker room, and then they missed their next 8 shots. They went almost 5 full minutes without a field goal. Brown really did a good job of locking up down the stretch, securing the home sweep of Cornell and Columbia, two games that they really had to win after starting 0-2 against Yale. You put Dartmouth in that category as well. Dartmouth has lost 7 straight. They're 0-4 in the Ivy League. That's a game that Brown should take this weekend, and then you roll the dice against Harvard, a team that had a tough road swing last weekend, one of the toughest in the Ivy League. They lost at Penn in overtime, and they lost at Princeton by a point, 70-69. So you're looking at Harvard, 13-6, 2-2 in the league, same record as Brown in Ivy League play. That could end up being a shakeout game as we look down the stretch and look at the four teams who are trying to get to the Ivy League tournament. Brown has a chance to go to 4-2. They could put Harvard a game behind them. They could have a game in hand in terms of any sort of tiebreakers at the end. A really important weekend for the Bears at the Pizzitola Center.
Yes, and maybe it'll help also that Harvard is at Yale on Friday night, which is, I wouldn't say, the more important game for Harvard, but I can tell you that they'll be more excited to play Yale than Brown, so it'll be interesting to see what type of physical and mental situation that Harvard shows up in at the Pizzitola Center on Saturday night. But Brown needs to take care of business first against Dartmouth, and then see what happens against a very talented Harvard team. So, Bill, this is good news. Not that I don't like being at 75 Fountain Street and knocking out the podcast, but I think we pulled it off.
I think so. So long as I remember to save it and, don't scrub it from the computer, I think we'll be good. I did want to say one thing about, coming into this weekend. I think we have Duke and North Carolina, and I've been watching, ESPN Classic has been replaying, I guess not ESPN Classic, but ESPNU has been replaying some classics from that series. And I was thinking to myself, I can't remember less buzz for a Duke and North Carolina game. Can you?
No, I really can't. This is the worst North Carolina team in, a long, long time. There was one in the early 2000s that I read about recently that was similar. It did not make the NCAA tournament. But even Duke, I think everyone who's a college basketball fan, just in curiosity, has to watch Duke a little bit. I like Vernon Carey. He's going to be a first-round pick. He's an interesting big guy. But, I think Duke, I think maybe is hurt by like a Zion you know, rollover. You know, there's no one even close to Zion Williamson, not only at Duke, but in the country this year. And, you know, Duke is far from must-see TV like they were last year. And, again, Carolina, if you haven't seen them yet, there's no reason to see them the rest of the season.
No, they're just 3-8 in the ACC, 10-12 overall. The last time they finished under 500 in the conference was 2009-2010. They were 20-17, 5-11 in the ACC. You know, a team that just really struggled. Actually ended up going deep into the NIT, beating Rhode Island, and then losing to Dayton at Madison Square Garden. I think that was in the NIT championship game, actually. You know, so you're looking at...
I remember that game. That was a Jim Barron coached Rhodey team, and Rhodey had Carolina on the ropes in the NIT semifinal.
And you certainly could say, and Rhodey fans would say, that you know, there was a non-call down the stretch. Lamont Ulmer, they would claim, was tripped. You know, it's certainly a matter of perception. I thought it was a foul watching it on TV at home. You know, but I didn't have that courtside view like many of the Rhodey fans or the officials did. You know, but that was really the last time that Carolina has struggled. Roy Williams has tried the one and done route here with Cole Anthony, and it's good in principle until Cole Anthony gets hurt. Misses the majority of the season to this point, and you don't really have the pieces behind him to fill in.
Not at all. So good. Bill, travel safe to D.C. Don't find too much trouble on Friday night, because I believe your game is at noontime. Yeah, I know you love those noon, 1 o'clock tips.
It's a tough one.
Foggy bottom. I'm sure you'll find some fun and go get us another win.
All right, Kevin. Safe travels to you as well. I know you headed out to Xavier. You know, one of the tougher trips in the Big East to make. Traditionally, that Cintas Center can get a little wild. Just make sure that you behave yourself in downtown Cincinnati, and maybe resist the temptation to slip across the river to some of those distilleries in northern Kentucky. I know that's a pretty good spot to go.
We'll see what we can do.
Very good.
Everyone, thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll be back with you yet again next week.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.